CosmicRadio.tv. This podcast would be nothing without our patrons, so special thanks goes out to them. Want to join their ranks and support independent content? Head to our Patreon at patreon.com/8bitlife. Welcome to the fine edition of my so-called 8-Bit Life. I'm your host, Roberto Vase. Joining me today, better known as DJ Rockman.
Yes, Vincent
Not
Banks.
DJ Cutman.
Yes, yes.
Vincent Banks.
Or DJ Robo Rob. Everybody messes up
my name. What's the most common DJ name people? Is it Cutman right now at this point? People mistake
Oh, yeah. Everybody's making fun of Cutman. I actually know we just did an album release party, and somebody called me DJ Rockman. Yes.
Well, because, you know, I don't think a whole lot of Americans know. And I say, like a lot of Americans know Mega Man.
Yes.
A lot of Americans don't know what, you know, the name of, I mean, the name of the character in Japan was Rockman.
Yeah.
You know, I forget the creator team of it, but they had specifically every character in that anime, and every character that's main, is all spoofs on music types.
Yeah, it is.
Like rock, bass, treble.
Yeah, treble.
Roll, for example, you know, rock and roll, that kind of thing. You know, even Proto Man is actually blues.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, you know, all of them follow these musical things
and
stuff like that. So a lot of people don't know that Rockman is actually Mega Man, unless you're in the know and you're like, oh yeah, Rockman, like that.
Oh, yeah,
the reason I always mistake Cutman, because I think
DJ Cutman,
right?
And what was funny was
it was another Mega Man kind of inspired name.
Yeah, and that was another Mega Man inspired name, which was real funny. I was playing a show next door to him when they were doing the RTX Twitch event right there, Vulcan Gas Company.
Right.
I was actually like two clubs down.
Oh shit!
I was doing my show, and then I had a whole bunch of people from RTX walking in, and like, oh, cool. And I was like, oh, shit, Rockman, hey, what's up? I was like, oh, what's up? They're like, well, yeah, we just got done seeing Cutman. I'm like, I just started laughing because of what happened at the Nerd Cave of the whole DJ Cutman joke.
Yeah.
But it all started with Doug Funny messing it up at Classic Game Fest.
Doug Funny, of course, is another nerdcore thing. For those who don't know who Vincent is in any capacity, DJ is a technical term? I really don't
know. I am actually a DJ.
DJ.
DJ / producer.
Right.
I mean, I do make music, but I'm DJ first before I'm a producer.
Right. And what that sort of entails, especially at a lot of scenes that you tend to go to are nerdcore related. Not saying that you're exclusive to nerdcore.
Well, no, yeah. Nerdcore and mixture of everything else.
Yeah. I mean, hip hop's that. I always talk about this every time I come to talk about nerdcore, is that nerdcore is hip hop. There's no difference. It just happens to be where that nerdcore decided to sample from video games and weird animes and you know, hip hop decided to sample from, you know, random music and Chinese films. If you're the Wu-Tang Clan,
you go way back. Yeah, and started early nerdcore days. We can say Wu-Tang.
I mean, Wu-Tang. Wu-Tang is fucking nerdy. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, they had an entire DVD collection of them doing dubs.
Yep.
Of old school Chinese films.
What was that show called? I don't remember.
It was on Spike.
On Spike. That's what it was.
It was on Spike. And then, but the thing is, they had it on DVDs.
Right. Which I always liked the fuck out of that show. I always liked that. Because again, the cool thing about that show is that, you know, if you know anything about Wu-Tang, you know that these guys fucking adore. Like, there's a reason why they called themselves what they did. And there's a reason why thematically they sampled what they did. It had nothing to do with like, oh, that sounds cool. It's like, no, they fucking got into the fucking culture.
Well, and what's crazy is, in Brooklyn, they have a place called Shaolin. That's what it's about. In the town of Shaolin, they say that because there's actually a spot called Shaolin.
Right.
And so in the East Coast, so that's why they do that. You know, it's a very unique aspect. And plus, you don't want to piss them off because they have so many
Wu-Tang
members.
Wu-Tang Clan ain't, you know, I mean, it's a line, but it's there's always truth to some lines. Wu-Tang Clan ain't on the fuck with.
Yeah, yeah, and, you don't fuck with that.
No,
yeah,
but I always. God, it reminds me. We kept talking about Chappelle Show earlier before this in the pre-shows. It reminds me of the draft. The Japanese. Yeah.
Don't worry, the draft popped in my head too. I'm like, oh, the draft. You know,
that was such a great. Like,
oh yeah, we were talking about. I was talking about that with a couple friends not too long ago about that, and talking about the draft, and I was like, oh, that was hilarious.
That's so great. Well, because again, it was such a great delivery of like, you know, old dirty bat. And again, it's so funny if I think of certain hip hop artists, like I forget that Old Dirty Bastard was part of Wu-Tang Clan because I always think of the song that always comes to mind is Baby I Got Your Money.
Yeah, everybody thinks of that. But...
Which that video, we're speaking of black exploitation, that video is just basically Dolomite.
Hey, Dolomite. That's all it was.
It
was all Dolomite. That's all it was. Well, because at that time, he unfortunately passed away.
Yeah.
Right during the time of that album coming out. And so they didn't even bring Khalees on there, or Khalees, whatever you want to call her. They didn't bring her on the set to do like a music video on a solo part. They just straight had Dolomite,
which is fine. It works out fine. It's a great. You know, if you've ever seen the music video for Baby I Got Your Money, and you don't know that's Dolomite, now you know, and it's like a great.
Yeah,
it's all the best scenes in that movie. It's all the best scenes and all the weird kind of juxtaposition cuts.
Yeah,
it's like it's one of the best sort of presentations of that movie.
Oh yeah,
and such.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you're DJ, and I mentioned story last week, and I think I messed up on it, and I kind of and it's sort of like even though we see each other all the time at these record events, and we never really socialize, and not because of anything bad, just because it's like, oh, you're the DJ, I'm the audience
busy.
Member,
yeah, I'm always yeah. busy.
And
I'm
we never really had something. A chance to chit chat, you know, and we've since talked, had many times of actually hanging out, and things like that.
We have.
My first interaction I remember with you, and I messed up on the name last week in this one. That's the reason I'm telling the story again because I messed up on the name. It's not what the name I thought it was. It was at Hole in the Wall.
Yeah.
Megaran, Raheem, you know, Raheem Jarvo.
Yeah, yeah.
Kyle Murdoch were in town.
Was it Kyle?
Who was else?
No. That was DJ Organic.
Was it DJ Organic? Okay. That's right. DJ Organic. That's right. Because I got to meet him for the first time.
It was DJ Organic.
Right.
That random. Sky Blue.
Yeah, that's right. Sky Blue was in town, too. That's right. That was my first in-person interaction with Sky Blue, and then I later had him on the show and learned a lot about the guy, which is...
Yeah, he's amazing. He's an amazing artist, too.
Feel free to look back on that podcast. Great interview. You learn a lot about this kid that went through a whole lot of shit and came out the better for it, and I love the guy for that
And
reason.
He actually, in his album, one of his albums, he does, like, he literally talks about it.
Yeah.
And it's powerful.
Yeah, no, for sure.
He reminds me of like the younger male version of Samus, how powerful his music can be.
Yeah, no, real powerful artist, Sky Blue. Again, check on the pencils. We'll have a link in the show notes for it. But during that night, and I messed up the name because I thought it was Mama Foos, but it's not Mama Foos. It's something else.
Mama V's.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
So that's so this is the redux that one, because I told it last week, but. We're there, and the only reason I bring it up because it was the first time I really remember talking with you, hang out with you, that you kept talking about this place called Mama V's.
And
I want you to describe the dish that you described to me and to Raheem and to team.
Oh, that and I got to finish that story with something else that comes in this week at South By too.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
This recent South By.
I think we talked about this between you and I, but you can kind of finish. So I'm hanging out with them, and because you know, because I've at this point, you know, at this point in time, you know, I've now hung out with Raheem many times.
Yeah.
You know, I don't call him Megaran anymore, or random. I call him, hey, how's it going, Raheem? Yeah. You know, that kind of thing. I've had him on the podcast many times, interviewed him, very familiar with him. Very, you know, I consider him, I always like the term that he uses when he calls his sort of hardcore friends, hardcore fans, family.
Yeah,
you know, I consider him a family of the show, much like you and much like everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, it's always a blast hanging out with him, no matter what we're doing. Even if I don't interview him, it's always a fun time. And so I've gotten now used to it now. And because of that, I started meeting all the artists who are there. And you have to be, you know, the guy who's DJing that, you know, for... You were just there for the heck of it.
No, I was the savior.
Oh, that's right. That's right. You're the savior because he had forgotten his shit. Or something I got lost.
No, they didn't have no DJ gear.
That's right.
And so what I did is I went ahead and lent them my DJ gear.
Right, and you were before the show began, I was doing interviews. You were busy installing shit, like in drivers and getting everything configured. That's what it was. And so we were talking, and you had either thought about last time you said you met them, because you told me the story about this place called Mama V's, this little food truck somewhere out in the middle of downtown Austin.
Yep.
And you described this dish, and I think it was like the mac and cheese. Nope. What was it called? What was it? Something.
So it's called the meatloaf quesadilla.
That's what it was. Meatloaf quesadilla. And I heard the name, and I was like, I can put exactly in my head what that means. And I don't think you need to describe any further, but it was just like, I was like, that sounds horrible and amazing at the same time. Like yeah. that sounds like a heart attack in a dish. And it sounds awesome and that. And you told and you described this to everybody else, and they said this exact yeah. same thing. And so throughout the entire night, you know, you're like, we're going to Mama V's. Like, this is your plan.
Yeah, I was like, we're going to Mama V's. Let's go before y'all drive off.
You had this fucking, like and I say, like, laid out, because it wasn't like, oh, yeah, we'll go to Mama V's. It was like, all right, we're done with this. You kept looking at the watch. Like, you kept looking at your watch, like, all right, well, Mama V's usually stays open pretty late, because after trap night, like, you went through all the yeah. different events that you yeah. did typically go to. Like, usually they stay open about this late, so we should be good. Like, you kept looking at your watch. You kept fucking studying, like, all yeah. right. Like you were like, we're gonna do this. This is a fucking mission. I'm gonna yeah. fucking do this. and then so I come along because I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm hanging out with this guy. This guy's been pretty fun, and I love hanging out with these other guys. I like chit chatting even more. So yeah, totally, I'm down. I have nothing better to do.
Yeah.
So I ride with you, and because you know parking's a bitch downtown, I didn't want to slow everything down at yeah. point. So I was like, oh, ride with Vincent. And so we're kind of hanging around the car. He's playing a bunch of music, you know, doing some cool stuff. But all throughout the whole thing, it's like, you know, it's not, you know, this is all this night. You know, and as awesome as night's been, because it's been a really crazy night, because yeah. I think at that point, like, someone wasn't, I don't even know if he was supposed to bill himself as there or something.
Maybe, it was
no,
IQ.
It was IQ.
That's no, because IQ was part of the tour as well.
Right, IQ was there. That's when I first saw IQ live. That was what it was. That was my first time actually seeing, because I'd heard him perform, but I'd never heard him perform live.
Yeah.
And that was why, that was the other thing, because I hadn't seen Chris in such a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
IQ, Chris Allen out there.
Yep.
Cool guy, good guy. I'm glad I, you know, got him. But anyways. So, you know, but he kept talking about this whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And so we're driving, and we're just like, yeah, Mama V's. And we get there, and we all park, and...
I get out of the car, look up there, and I see the doors closed. So much salt in the system. I was salty as hell. And then, like, I looked at Reem and everybody. I'm like, I'm so sorry.
And it became this, like, and the greatest part about that, I think you had said, like, we can go to a Denny's or something. And it's just like,
I was like,
we're just going to go get some sleep.
Yeah, they're like, go get some sleep. And I'm like, oh, cool. All right. I was so...
It was like, again, for me, not even like in a bad way, because I was laughing the whole time.
Yeah.
Not out of anything else, but just because it's like, there are moments in your life that are so like you can see like that this is where the jump cut would happen.
Yeah.
And that's where the movie would that be like, I'm so sorry, guys. And that's what I kept imagining in my head. It was just like, oh, we're going to movies. It'd be fucking amazing. Jump cut to, oh shit.
Yeah.
like that's the movie. And my pet was so fucking funny.
And what's crazy is I didn't know if that was worse or when I re-met Reem, I should say, because I met him back in Arizona when I used to work with a group called AZHP. Back right. in Arizona for Comic-Con and stuff. That's when he first came out with his first album, Nerdcore album,
right.
Mega Ran. Me and Doug Funny were doing a show there, and it was downtown. It was me, Doug, and I had not my small controller. I actually had my vinyl set.
Oh, shit. Okay.
And we were opening up for Richie Branson and Mega Ran.
Yeah.
So me and Doug are moving my table up to the
stage. Oh, you told the story, yeah.
Yeah, we're moving up to the stage, and then I'm like, all right, cool. I pick it up, and then there's this cable that catches my foot. I hit the floor, but luckily have my hand holding my table and not knocking it down.
Now, we should probably explain, especially those people in the audience that aren't familiar with DJs and stuff like that, and I say that just as a thing.
Yeah.
Typically, they're you know, some people think of DJs. We'll probably go into this more in depth
in a little bit.
When I think of DJs, they always think of just, you know, like the wedding DJ, the guy that plays music, or the radio DJ, the guy that's like...
Or the Quinceañera DJ.
Right, or the Quinceañera DJ, with the exact same one as the wedding DJ, except specifically the build...
For kids.
It is very much reggaeton, and never mind.
Yeah. Right.
I've been enough quinces in my life. As a Mexican, I've been to enough quinces that I know exactly the stack.
Same here, because I'm born in Austin, Texas, yeah. So I know that feeling.
I know that stack perfectly. And it's a very specific stack of music. It's not, there's no thing else. It's always, it's
top 40s.
It's, you know, there's at least one Selena song on there, if not a couple 10, and they're always, basically you take the same stack that would happen at a Mexican wedding that after they, you know, that the DJ typically will go to all like the white, the neutral stuff, and then we'll go to the Mexican stuff.
Yeah,
it's taking that stack and just putting it here in the Quinceañera party.
I had to play one for a buddy of mine. I played a Quinceañera before, so I know the villain.
It's a good sack.
Well, I mean,
there's some fun stuff.
It's fun,
there.
But it's fun to the point where somebody comes up to you, speaks Spanish, and I'm not Hispanic.
Yeah.
And they're like, I'm like,
out of the way.
Yeah, they're like, out of the way. I was like,
out of the way.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. And they're like breaking down.
Out of the way.
Yeah, like, I was like,
Selena. You just get like that one key word.
Yeah, when they go down to like their deeper bands, I'm like, oh
no, it's like,
oh,
well, there's some. I've learned when I moved to Laredo, because I'm originally from Michigan. I moved down there and did college. I learned a lot about like certain Mexican bands that were big. Like I didn't know about El General, which is a dirty motherfucker. If you ever translate the Spanish language, by the way.
That is the Two Live Crew.
Yes. I have never thought of it that way, but that's absolutely right. It is the Two Live Crew of Mexico. I mean, El General is very, yep, absolutely.
DJ knowledge right here.
No, I would not have thought about that, but that's perfect. That's absolutely right, because there's the Two Live Crew gets pretty fucking, you know.
Oh, they get down, yeah.
They get down and dirty.
They get down and dirty. That's how it works.
I mean, they're good, but, you know, like, there's a reason why they have a song called Band in the USA, because there was a whole, you know, for those who are history who have no idea what we're talking about, like, at one point in time, I think this is the 80s, might have been.
Oh, this is
the
90s? This is early 90s.
Early 90s, okay. I was forgetting.
This is early 90s hip-hop.
Yeah, that's right. Two Live Crew was this band that, I say band being like they're a group, where if you have like gangster rap and you have sort of like really, you know, it's just like if you like, you take something like De La Soul, you take something like,
well, De La Soul was like modern hip hop. You had gangster rap, which was your NWA.
Right. This is, they almost sort of like ride the line, like
they were considered as a booty shaking.
That's what I was trying to figure out, like what the terminology
it's,
I wanted.
It's booty shaking music. Yeah. It was literally like, for our term, newer term now is twerking.
Yeah.
That was, ours was booty shaking.
Yeah,
music
a lot of lyrics were, and again, this is not say bad or good, it's just how
risque.
Music is.
It was very risque.
Yeah, very risque, like talking, you know, in very much the sort of, you know, for that time of a period of the world, especially like the Western culture, even though this has always existed, even though half this stuff was already there, it's just, it had never blown up on the radio yet.
Yeah.
Even, you know, that's what's always funny about it. But the minute it blew up, you know, you had a whole bunch of people who were just not used to that.
So, and they were scared. They were like, no, you can't play this. It
was, yeah.
Because you had them, you had 69 Boys.
Yeah.
You had 69 Boys. You had Tag Team.
Yeah.
You had the booty shaking. Yeah. Like,
and out of all of them, like, Tag Team is like
They were the cleanest.
Yeah.
The one hit wonder cleanest.
Yeah, I can do Whoop, There It Is.
And Space Jam.
No, that wasn't them. That was Quad City DJs.
Oh yeah, it was them.
Quad City DJs like also Quad was City a cleaner DJ. One, but they had, you know, Ride the Train.
Well, yeah, you
come
well,
and
yeah,
ride the train.
Yeah, you had that. Or I forgot, you had the Adam Family remix of Whoop, There It Is.
Yeah, oh god, yes. there's a lot of those things, and Two Live Crew was this one that just went really, you know, fucking raunchy, nothing wrong with that. It's just what happened was a lot of people were like, sort, you know, this is before we had
parental,
you know, a lot of these are the songs that triggered that to happen.
Yeah, it was literally, you know, just like how Mortal Kombat started the ESRB radio.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Damn, Legion Suit Larry, those were the ones that triggered the ESRB system. But as of the hip hop scene, that Two Live Crew was one of the big groups that started the parental advisory.
Right, exactly.
So you had to be careful.
Yeah, well, you had to know what you're saying. But anyways, going back to the whole DJ thing, so people typically think of those types of DJs.
Yeah.
The other DJs, the ones I like personally, if ever I had like a hosted a party of some sort, and I had the money to like pay for a DJ,
yeah,
I would get your kind of DJ, which is sort of somebody that either A, through electronic means, you know, spin something, or through, you know, record vinyls. Does it. So typically, you know, if you think of the, you know, the class, I forget, you know,
classic,
I think, you know,
thing.
Like you think of Beastie Boys, like two turntables and a microphone.
Or I was thinking House Party, like Martin Lawrence.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Where you have this sort of, you know, these essentially, and again, two record players that are a little bit tuned for the ability to scratch and do all this stuff that people sort of connect with that kind of style of DJing.
We call those our babies techniques. Yeah. The techniques are the ones.
The techniques are, they're making, I was talking about this earlier. They made a new one.
They were talking. Yeah. I have not.
It's like super fucking pricey as hell.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's audiophile grade, but it's like, it is the tech, they brought it back. Cause it's such a funny thing that the record player that is held in high regard by DJs.
It's techniques.
Is held in high regard by audiophiles. In fact, if you've never seen a technique, you have probably seen other like the way that record player looks is so quintessential.
Yeah.
It's so like ubiquitous that like Audio Technica, like their Technic record player looks like dead on similar to a technique.
But the only biggest thing that you know about a technique compared to that one is the weight. Yeah. Technique weight.
Oh yeah, they're heavy. They're beasts. They're workhorses
Well, they're for a reason is because in the past, when you had house parties and stuff, people will bump the table.
Yep.
And when they bump those tables, it would scratch and mess up your records. The thing is, the techniques had so much weight on it to the point where even if somebody bumped into it,
unless they literally hit the needle,
it was not going to move.
Because they were like the first, like one of the first companies to really, I think if I'm mistaken, like they were one of the few to do the direct drive.
Yeah, they did.
This is where you get your records, you can start arguing. Well, it doesn't sound exactly like a belt driven one, and it has this thing, but for DJs like yourself,
direct drives.
This is what allowed you to scratch very effectively.
Yeah, it was very effectively depending on how you did it. Because some, you can say that. But at the same time, you can have a belt drive where you can still scratch. It's just you got to learn your technique.
Right.
It's very tricky and complex. Yeah. And a lot of people don't understand that if you don't really DJ. They're just like, oh, yeah, you just spin records and you do this. It's like, no, when you're talking in my ear in the middle of a set and I'm trying to go to multiple songs while people are still dancing and having a good time, I'm multitasking. You know, that's part of my
skill. So I guess here comes a question. Because you were mentioning, I think you mentioned pre-show that you'd gotten this earlier. I was like kind of holding back on talking about this. What got you into doing DJing in the first place? Like, what was your sort of your jump off point?
My jump off point was actually my father. My father DJed when he was.
Oh, really?
Yeah, back in the day, he DJed. And we still have crates at home, ton of crates that we just play old school music. But when I was a little kid, what I would do is to keep me out of trouble. Back in the 90s, was either I was playing Nintendo, but before I had that, I would get home from school. My dad would sit me down in a chair, have his turntables right here on a kitchen table, and he'll turn them on, and he's like, here, I want you to listen to the one song on the side. And this started when I was around like 4, around that age. And he's like, listen to this side. He goes, all right, then I want you to move this needle to the other side. And then I started learning and progressing from there. But what got me into actually like start doing it and coming back in a consistent basis was I was in college. There, I was playing a couple shows down there, but I wasn't feeling the vibe. And when I moved back to Austin after college, it was South by Southwest.
Right.
And I went to a show back in Plush, one of the clubs I play at all the time. And they had a night called Wait Night. And this first trend came out as a dubstep. Okay, so I was like, all right, I want to go hear this. Now, the dubstep that you know now is not the same than back in 2008. So I get there, and I listen to this music, and it was heavy bass, but it wasn't no... It didn't sound like Transformers having sex with one another. That's what I call it, okay? That's the Skrillex stuff.
Right.
This was the UK original dub, and the bass hit so hard, my chest was rumbling.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what to do. And I'm like, oh, this is so fun. And 12th Planet was actually playing that night during South By. Me and a buddy of mine, Will, a good Marine buddy of mine, we were like, dude, we got to come here more. And I was like, I need to get on this. I need to jump on this. And so I get down there, start playing, played a couple sets there, and I enjoyed it. But then I wanted to get back into hip hop. And I remember listening to Nerdcore back in the day. And I was like, okay. I actually want to do something different than other DJs because when one trend starts going on, everybody wants to do that same thing.
Right.
And downtown Austin, if you go down Dirty Six, that's all you're going to hear is the same top 40s, same stuff.
Yeah.
So I wanted to take that chance and take a risk. I'm a very big risk taker into DJing. So I'm like, I'm going to do nerdcore. And one of my sets that I played, I did strictly like nerdcore hip hop. Had a ton of people come in.
Yeah.
And they're like, I never heard this before. Where can I find this? And it's like, okay, well, you can find this here. I like to give out the source.
Right, exactly. Because, you know, you as a, from a DJ's point of view, and even from a fan's point of view, but especially from a DJ's point of view, is like people are asking, like, this is awesome music. Where can I get this? Like,
yeah.
Cool. That means I, because I imagine being a DJ, and this is sort of where I've always felt a good DJ is especially at a party sequence, yeah. That, and even you mentioned this, the idea of like that you're multitasking and making sure everyone has a good time. Is a lot of it becomes, I always feel like the best sets by DJs, no matter what, whether you're, you know, the kind of, you know, sort of playing other people's music in that, yeah, kind of regard, or you're something like a Daft Punk where you're sort of spinning that,
yeah,
is reading the crowd and seeing what the crowd is getting into.
And I
then adjusting your set accordingly.
Yeah, and that's one of the big things I do. I always do that, but what I do is, which a lot of DJs don't pay attention to, I do a lot of songs with female vocalists.
Yeah.
That includes drum and bass. That comes, mm-hmm, to house. It comes to hip hop because my first priority is always to make a woman dance, make a woman feel good. Like, oh man, I haven't heard this in a while. Like,
yeah.
And they'll start grooving. But once that happens, that picks up for
everyone else sees it. And everyone kind of gets,
like,
yeah,
like, oh, okay. So this is good. Oh, okay. And that's what you want. That includes nerdcore. That includes everything.
No, whatever the, you know, and a lot of it is reading the crowd.
It is reading the crowd.
And it's, because again, the worst thing you can do to the DJ, it's like, no, man, this is my music. I'm like, not because I don't think a DJ have a skill. They do, for, yeah, sure. But a lot of what I've always felt a good DJ does, almost like a good performer in general.
Yeah.
But specifically DJ, just because of the nature of how it is seeing what the crowd is doing, what the energy of the room is.
Oh yeah.
And how to either keep that up or take it down when it needs to be taken, yeah, you know, taken down, and understanding that certain music, certain things, yeah, not just simply at like BPMs or anything like that, but just sort of
the tone. It's, yeah, always a tone. And, yeah, I always tell people that do start DJing, I was like, think of it like a wave, just like straight wave format. You're going to start going low in the beginning. Cause like, for example, yeah, open sets. Yeah. It might seem harsh, but what you want to do is you do want to bring some people in. Open sets are always not going to be the best because people don't come for opening sets,
yeah,
which disappoints me. I personally don't like when people don't come for opening sets.
I make an effort anytime I go to concerts I can,
yeah,
is to go, especially for like, you know, like I, you know, nerdcore events, and
oh, yeah,
I do all the time. I you know, one of the events I always go to, like I mentioned, time Japan Night, I always make sure to go for every part of the show, no matter who I know, no matter, yeah, what I know, because I'm much like you. I know a lot of times that it took a lot of energy and a lot of effort to make your way down here,
yeah,
no matter where you are from the world.
Also,
and it takes a lot of guts to go up on there and to, you know, yeah, to say, hi, we're Gimmick and we're going to play a weird, you know, nerdy kind of music,
yeah,
at some random bar. It's, yeah, in Sixth Street or it's like, hi, we're this band. I'm this nerdcore guy.
And that's the thing that, you know, a lot of people don't pay attention to. And I have posted this during South By just because it wasn't to be mean to anybody. It was just like, hey, support your,
yeah,
opening acts, because you know what, you might find somebody better than the actual headliner.
Well, no, and that's happened to me so many times, yeah, where I have learned, you know, for me a lot of times it's like I've learned of acts I didn't know about, you know, or you know, like at that point, you know, or hearing people I had not heard yet,
yeah,
and it was this kind of cool thing of that, like I'd never seen, like I said, like I heard IQ perform, but I'd never seen him perform like actually in person.
Yeah.
And you know, he gets really fucking passionate at times.
Yeah, he gets very powerful, know, and passionate.
But even that regard, there, you know, like I would not have heard of I think the band is Bitforce, and it was playing, you,
yeah,
know,
and Bitforce can be a last band, you know,
yeah,
last,
exactly,
group.
Exactly.
It's just hard to find that.
I told Raheem Mega Rand, because I was joking with him at one point, like just completely joking with him, but during the interview,
yeah,
because I usually interview before he goes on. I was joking, like, because, you know, we're talking about the albums he's doing, and I said, like, you know, when are you gonna do your own like body count kind of album?
Yeah.
I was joking, and then Bitforce came up. I go, you know, I was just joking about that whole body count album thing, yeah, concept.
Yeah, he's like,
what? And I was just like, okay, I see what you're saying. I was like, that was pretty, because at that show,
yeah.
And this is sort of a weird thing. Sometimes we get lucky. And I think they're going on tour with Bitforce soon. So
well, Bitforce is actually here tonight.
Are they here tonight? Okay.
They're playing with Amanda Lepre.
That's right. That's what they're doing.
They're playing tonight. I forgot where it's at.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I can't make it because I got my show too.
I'm doing this. But regardless of that fact, it's interesting again from that point of view, because I had not really, until only as a, I've always been in hip hop, but I had never really gotten as much as I have now through Nerdcore. Nerdcore has kind of made me a little bit more comfy. I mean, yes, I am Hispanic, I'm Mexican and whatnot, but I mean, I'm wearing a goddamn Mega Man shirt right now. I you're wearing a Wario hat
This is
Niles.
I say Niles Gray. I keep calling him Niles Gray because that's his original name. It's he always plays with.
Now you're thinking the names.
Oh my god! Because I know this dude, and I played with him, or I'm
that's
know
okay.
Him so well.
It says Malibu Shark Attack. It looks
well. It's his band.
Oh shit!
Tribe One. It's Tribe One's band.
That's right. I remember him talking about this at one point.
Yeah, that's Malibu Shark Attack.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so
Tribe One.
I had to represent that.
It's okay. No. But the point being is that, like, I have never, not because I don't think I wouldn't enjoy it, but I've always been sort of, like, I always feel weird going to a hip-hop show.
Yeah.
Not because I'm not into this music. No, it's just like, you look like there was always this event. I remember this this convention I went to, this SpillCon, where we had had like they had had before it, because the guy's into the guy Corey Coleman's into hip hop, had like some this hip hop event that happened, but it wasn't like it was like almost this weird open mic kind of thing, and it wasn't necessarily the best hip hop because I'd heard better at this point in time, and I think that's what sort of it's become kind of very apparent that I've been spoiled. In that, nerdcore people are actually really damn good hip hop people first.
No, you're not the only one. Well, I mean, the hip hop I listen to now is strictly underground. I don't do top 40s.
Yeah.
And a lot of artists that I listen to are, like, for example, QN5. Love all their artists. Substantial, by far one of my favorite underground artists, Mr. Lift. There's a lot. Really good website I always use Bandcamp. But the groups that I use to listen to is Mellow Music Group. They actually have like Mercs on there.
Yeah.
They have a lot of good artists there. That's a good place. And like I said, QN5.
For me, it became a very apparent. Like I made a quick Pandora station, and all I used was Panacea as the seed.
Yeah,
and that triggered me to go to everything I wanted to go music wise.
Well, you hip-hop. Need to. I'm sorry, but. Get away from Pandora and use Spotify.
No. I actually use iTunes Music as my main thing because it's integrated to iOS.
Yeah.
The only reason I use Pandora as that, it was more of a I use Pandora for discovery purposes. Because
what I'm saying is I would say Spotify is better. Spotify's discovery is so much better.
It varies, and it all depends on what I need.
Yeah.
But that being said, the point I'm ultimately trying to make is that a lot of really quality hip hop is in nerdcore, not saying it's the only one. There's like we mentioned before, there's a whole bunch of you mentioned Bandcamp is the indie site to buy music on anyways.
Yeah. Yeah.
But a lot of it, for me that got me back into hip hop, into the deeper way of understanding it was nerdcore.
Yeah, and that was too for me. Like I said, that was, but then like the main one that actually got me back into hip hop more than anything else was the Samurai Champloo soundtrack.
Yes.
And it was Nujabes. And Nujabes, like I said,
Nujabes is I mean, and rest in peace,
it's
man.
It's considered new jazz. Yeah, I'm so salty about that.
And we all are. We still are to this day.
It's considered new jazz, but it is hip hop too. And the thing is, he had popular hip hop artists. He has Pete Rock, CL Smooth.
Yeah.
He has all those artists on there. And that's where I learned from Substantial, from his Hideout Productions album.
Yeah.
And, he has by far one of my favorite songs, and I suggest you listen to it, called Think Different.
Okay.
It's very strong, and it's actually doing a comparison of like mainstream rappers to MCs. And that right there actually is what I look at, and I consider like Mega Ran, IQ, Shibuya Black, Samus. They're MC.
Okay, so that, this is where...
And that's a heavy term to use because MCs have a purpose. They actually have something that they're going to say that's speaking on their mind. Like Tali Kweli, you know, those are MCs. Yeah. Those are not rappers. They're MCs. And even and that's what you look at it as. I mean, I even consider some band, some rock bands, MCs because they have an actual purpose. Like, you know... the Cinder the Eldrick, they have some yeah. Amanda Lepreet. She's I consider her a MC.
Amanda is a very we've had her on the show. She is an amazing force.
Oh yes, she's amazing. She's awesome.
But okay, so let's go back to kind of talking about your craft, if nothing more. Oh, yeah. We this all roundabout way of explaining why it was so. It's funny. We got here. We took this tangent and this all roundabout way to explain why it was your story originally of yeah. like keeping the thing there because this is all very expensive equipment. So if after that was your first heard of thing,
yeah.
What's kind of kept you, I mean, especially now, cause we have a weird scene in the DJ world. You bring up, you know, yeah. drum and bass, you bring up, you know,
trap is the thing now, but I'm not a big fan of it. There are certain like nerdcore trap songs that I like from Rising K. Amazing.
You should probably explain trap. And the only reason I say explain trap because a lot of these terms I've learned now because I've now sort of you know by being among people like Mega Rand who was in yeah. you know way more into hip you know being among Kyle among you among yeah. all these guys I've learned a lot of these terms. But I know that there's a lot of nerdcore guys that don't know what these terms are because they're not hip hop. They're strictly like or I'm strictly nerdcore.
So trap originally was a genre more catered to the South. It was right. more Atlanta, like Atlanta hip hop yeah. was considered trap, you know. Excuse me. And it was the trap house.
Yeah.
As of trap house being a slum house where it was ghetto. It was always about the grimy yeah. lifestyle.
And there's certain there's definitely been some like top, you know, we say top 40, but there's been some
there's
mainstream.
Some top 40, but if you want to look at the original trap yeah. artist, look at Scarface where yeah. he was talking about things in the slums. He's
yeah.
A Houston character, you know, Houston cat, I should say, but you know, that's that DJ Screw stuff like that. Yeah. But now trap has become a more of a electronica.
Yeah, it's definitely become this sort of thing where when I finally got introduced to trap music by somebody, you yeah. know, by you know nerdcore kind of thing, and I recognize a style, I go, oh, that's trap music. To me, I always like, because like for me, my musical background interest has always been electronica. I've always yeah. been in this electronica kind of world.
The same.
And well aware of like you mentioned, like you're introduced to the original, like, I can't believe I'm blanking, the Skrillex stuff. And
Oh, yeah, the original dub. The original dub.
Right.
Yeah.
Like for me, like a lot of my like original electronica stuff was like Prodigy was like.
Mine was like early drum and bass. You know, like I was yeah. a drum and bass.
I was very much in like the melodic side of like electronica. Like I had listened to, you know, like a lot, I'm probably the only
Chemical
person.
Chemical Brothers yes, and stuff like that.
Yes. I'm probably the only person here that it's funny because my brother, who's never into that stuff, but knows I'm into that stuff, he'll go, hey, what was the name of that song from the end of Mortal Kombat? Oh, Halcyon and On by Orbital.
Yeah.
And it's like, I know that song. I know the 10-minute song. I know exactly where it's been used. And I think my favorite usage still is Hackers because as opposed to putting it at the end of the movie, it put it in the beginning.
What's funny is I get that always whenever like somebody needs to know some songs.
Yeah.
Like, what's that one song with that one person when they're like, no, 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 no. And they'll do the tone.
Right.
And like, and I'm like, oh, is this, you know, yeah. it was like, you know, like, how did you know that? I was like,
because I know that song.
I know how you did your course.
Right. and for me, a lot, and it's very, very specific electronica songs is because I'm so into that genre that I can know those things. And you know, when people were listening to like when people were buying like the whatever the top 40 ones, like I remember like one of the best CDs I ever bought was the Wipeout XL soundtrack. Yes.
I still have that soundtrack.
I still have
it.
It has Atom Bomb on there. It has Firestarter, the instrumental version. A lot of, I mean, first off, Wipeout the game itself has a fucking amazing soundtrack.
Yeah.
And Wipeout 3 has some, like, really good, you know, like some really good Sasha music on there.
Yeah. And my only other soundtrack that I think that is better, just because I like drum and bass, I think that was better than that soundtrack. was Ridge Racer.
Oh,
R-Type 4.
R-Type 4
soundtrack is. Drum and bass.
R4 first and foremost is one of my all-time favorite arcade racers.
Yes,
I love that game. In fact, I have my copy too. I had played it. Like the funny thing about that game, I played it on a PlayStation demo at one point.
Yeah,
loved it to death. Bought it.
PlayStation Magazine demo.
Yep,
I remember that. Yeah. I think it was issue like 120,
something like that. But it was like R4, and I've always loved that's like I have the same thing. I have the soundtrack as well.
Yeah.
And I've always loved that soundtrack because like wasn't my favorite. I mean, I always loved the game. It has, you know, the racing game has like the team I'd always pick because they're American.
Yeah.
Even though they're the hardest team to play.
Yeah, they are.
Is Dig Dug Racing.
Yeah.
And I love that the backstory of them where it's like the owner, like the manager's like fighting with the owner for any kind of money whatsoever. Yeah. Where everyone else gets, here's your new car. It's like, here's your same piece of shit car. Yeah, yeah. We only added sort of thing. And I never knew that as a kid. I was just like, why have I played, like, because I always played the Americans. I'm American.
It's like, congratulations, the struggle is real.
Yeah. It was such a weird thing of like this weird meta story of this, of like the team that's just like, we ain't getting shit for money.
No.
And we are trying to win. Like, you better fuck. Like, it always felt like, because everyone on the team's like, hey, you better qualify. But this one's like, if you don't fucking qualify,
you ain't getting nothing. You're out of luck.
Not only you out of this race, but we're out of jobs.
Yeah.
It was hilarious. I always think, I my head now, I juxtaposition that with the Hey Yeah video by Andre, yeah. But the whole thing of that video was like, I'm telling you, 3,000, don't mess up for everybody. Greyhound don't float on water. I'm thinking like that in my head now. Yeah. It's like in Japan because you're an American crew racing in Japan. And again, I always loved that, but the soundtrack was this, you know, amazing thing. You know, like even to the point of like when you'd get to the garage, I always like that.
It's that drum and bass. That one.
Yeah,
it was that drum and bass film, but what was crazy was that was like my walk into drum and bass before.
Really? See, I never knew that was drum and bass until you told me now. I would never have known where to quantify that soundtrack.
And you could tell it's drum and bass because a lot of it is considered breakbeat. So
right.
It's breakbeat drum and bass. So it's like boom, tap-um, tap-um, tap-um. You know, it's that kind of style where it's like, okay, so it's you can tell it's drum and bass.
See, I always get drum and bass mixed up in my head, and this is where we get weird with genres in general. I always get that mixed up in my head with trip hop. I never know where that line stops.
Trip hop, because the thing is, trip hop does a lot of breakbeat.
Yeah,
breakbeats.
Like I always get I think Massive Attack would be. I would say it's very much trip hop.
Yeah. And with that, like I said, there's house songs on there too.
Yeah, exactly. It's a great soundtrack.
It's just ridiculous.
I have driven many times to any song off that album.
I literally would put it on the menu. I would put it on the menu where you can listen to music and let the cars race itself.
One of the things you can unlock on that soundtrack, and you can unlock if you, and I cheated to unlock this because it's you have to beat the game with every fucking racer to do it. You can, and it's again. When Namco gets ridiculous, they get really ridiculous.
I remember the Pac-Man car.
Yes.
You know, I beat everything. I beat everything, too.
You did it legitly.
I did it legitly.
Yeah, Pac-Man car is just, like, ridiculous. Like,
But the song was so good,
though. It's a great fucking remix of the Pac-Man song. Yeah. It's, like, one of the best songs on the album. And it's, like, I was like, do-do-do. Like, I've played that in my car just and it's such an amazing fucking, like, remix of that song. I was just like, damn, I wish more people had heard this because it's such it's one of those things when I'd stumble upon it on the soundtrack, I go, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, well, you think that one's crazy. That Pac-Man Championship Edition?
Yeah.
DX?
Yeah.
They did a drum and bass version?
I have that
song. So I am literally trying to find that original song so I can buy it because I want to play that at shows because it's like it changes every, like, 3 minutes, but it's an amazing song.
Yeah.
And it's drum and bass, though, and it has that heavy bass, but you hear that do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. You hear it in the background, and people are like, oh, wait, is that Pac-Man?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Well, because that, like, it's and I've brought this up in the past, but, like, there's a song, and I forget who the fuck does it. It is a top 40 hip-hop song, rap song, but I always remember the fact that it sampled Pac-Man was Game Over.
Game Over, Little Flip.
Little Flip, that's what it was. Yeah. And
you had that chump sound. Yeah.
Right, and I recognize that like no one's business because I'm well aware of this damn fucking Pac-Man.
Yeah.
And that's what attracted me to the song first because it's not really the greatest hip-hop song on the planet.
Well, that and
There's one other one that does it too.
The other sample that was in there was the Sonya Blade. Ah!
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that shit.
It's slowing down in the beginning.
And then there's other hip hop songs in the sample.
Yeah, there's other hip hop songs.
I've talked about that in the past. Yeah. But going back to this, because we didn't really like to cover this, even though we were like almost at the hour mark, which is amazing.
Nice.
Which is great. Because I do ask every nerd this, because you did mention, you know, kind of keep you, your father sort of keep you on the straight and narrow as best as he could, which obviously right. If you're here and you're doing amazing things. Yes. So he did a great job.
Well, him and my grandmother yeah. was the one that got me the Nintendo. So,
okay. How did I guess that's the question then, because that's, yeah. you mentioned earlier that it was like your father introduced you to hip hop and sort of the DJ side of things. How did you get into the Nintendo side of things?
Yeah,
not a bad way.
So, the Nintendo side of things was my grandmother. You know, I was the only child. She spoiled me, and she got me a Nintendo when I was four. My first game was Mega Man 3 that I played.
Oh, interesting. It's funny. That was the only Mega Man I actually truly owned. I had a friend of mine that owned Mega Man 2, and I'd always play at his house. But the one I bought was Mega Man 3.
Yeah,
so it's I'm glad to know that we have that same connection point here.
Yeah. See, and then I had Mega Man 3 when I started, and that's what got me into Mega Man. I mean, I have a tattoo of Mega Man on my arm, so.
Really? Where is it? Let me see it. I don't think I've seen it.
I got X and Zero.
Oh, shit. I never actually saw that till today. I don't. I think every time I've seen you, you've had a sleeve over that.
Yeah.
I think that's the first time I've ever seen the tattoo.
But yeah, I had to get it.
No, I'm not judging. Look, you do you.
Yeah, but that's what got me into gaming when I was little. I mean, I played football, and I did a lot of things, and I was I was a huge outgoing person, but I was always a nerd at heart.
Right.
And I still am. And I never hide that, and it was hard, you know, back in the 90s. It was hard because, you know, you was a nerd, you get beat,
you get your ass whooped by, you know, or if people would shun you, you were outcast.
It was definitely a weirder, it was strange because you know, I mean, I grew up in Michigan. You obviously grew up,
I grew up here. where it was not the same like how it is now in Austin,
right? and even in Michigan, you know, I'm not saying that's a bad thing, it's just, you know, being kind of a weird, geeky person, even because you. The tough part now, I mean, it's definitely different now, but not even a bad way, in a good way. But the tough part was always kind of trying, I mean, and I think this happens anywhere in high school, middle school now, even now. It's sort of finding people that have that interest.
But see, the thing is, it's easier now.
Yeah, I think it's
a lot easier now. I mean, yes, there's still bullying, there's still shunning here and there. But majority of the time, you can walk around with a Mega Ran shirt, or you can walk around with a Malibu Shark Attack nerd shirt. And, you know, rock everything and still be cool,
right?
Because that's the cool thing now.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like,
now, high school students, even middle school students with cell phones are playing Pokemon Go.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the cool thing to do. I mean, even grown folks like us that knew about it, we love it, and we're still going to play it.
Right.
But, like, back in the day when we were playing that, we were getting bullied at the same time.
Well, because it was the weird thing, you know. If you analyze Nintendo and you analyze video games and you analyze what that was, you know, here is this weird gray box from Japan, and a lot of people bought it and a lot of people played it, and you can go down the street and everyone has played Mario.
Oh yeah,
but not everyone decided to grab that copy of, you know, of Dragon Quest.
Dragon Warrior.
You know,
Dragon Warrior.
Not everybody, you know, when the Super Nintendo came out, not everybody, you know, said, what's this thing called Chrono Trigger?
Or ActRaiser.
Or ActRaiser.
Yeah,
or, you know, one of my all-time favorite games, Earthbound. Not everybody gravitated towards that. And even more importantly, not everyone gravitated towards, you know, getting issues of this weird propaganda magazine in all aspects of the word, and it sounds great to say that, even though it's a classic magazine. But Nintendo Power was
Nintendo Power, Tips and Tricks, Game Pro.
Yeah,
you had all those cool magazines.
Not everyone did that, and then, you know, juxtaposition that, like for me, there's this console thing, but then there's even this weirder thing called the computer. And everyone, you know, I was like, what do you mean computer? You mean that thing that you used Word for? And then here I am, like, playing like Doom and weirder kind of art, you know, weird, you know, real time strategy games called Warcraft, where it's orcs and humans and they're fighting, you know. And if you start breaking it down, it does sound, I mean, it is nerdy as hell. They're cool. Yeah. It's amazing. And we're now at a point, where somebody in Hollywood thought that property was so damn good. let's make a goddamn movie and spend a shit ton of money making it.
And not just that, like, they want to go to Comic-Con. They want to go to E3. They want to be with us because now everybody's saying, man, that's cool. So now, like, now you have somebody playing either, like, it doesn't matter, they're playing a video game one way or the other from a mobile game.
Right.
They can say, no, I don't play real video games, but you're playing, like, Candy Crush. Yeah. You're playing a video game.
No, and that's why it's entirely different era as then, but you know, it's hard even just to find those people. Like, for me, a lot of like, especially like the memory I always remember, the earliest one that was sort of my weird sort of juxtaposition and put me in a very eye light of like, okay, something, I am definitely different than everybody else right now in this room. One of our my science professors, this fifth grade science teacher, the big you know, obviously at that point in time, the big science person, and still I'd say a pretty popular person in science, is Bill Nye. And that was when the heyday of Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Yes.
There's a episode of Bill Nye. I don't even remember what episode it is, but the opening thing, he does a full parody of 2001 Space Odyssey. Now, kids at that time no one saw 2001, you know. And again, I don't expect any, you know, I didn't expect anyone that, you know, no one my age was supposed to see Monkey in a Monolith and you know, Hal and know those jokes.
Yeah.
I got into science fiction and watched that somehow. Some of my parents trusted me watching 2001 Space Odyssey, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, I was watching it though, too. I loved it.
Which is great. Great movie. I may want to watch again. But anyways, so I'm there. And I told my science teacher, you know, we watched it, 'cause I never watched that Bill Nye episode until that day. And I just start laughing. And I start, like, giggling as his kid. No one else is giggling around me, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone's like, why are you laughing? I'm like, you don't. Oh. And the thing is, I think the teacher saw that I was laughing and saw that I got it.
Yeah.
And then we had this, like, weird moment of, like, okay, you're a little different. And you know, I later learned that her husband, like, got a, which I thought was the coolest license plate at one point. I think he got it from California. It was, like, EMC2, which is such a great license plate to have. This word. If you're gonna get a license plate, that was such, again, it was this weird moment. I think I had mentioned it somehow because she's in a Star Trek and somehow things came about where I was in the know and I got the gag and no one else in the room got the gag.
Yeah.
And it was that moment of like, all right, something's up with me where I'm that. I think some of my friends got the gag to a certain degree, but I was the one that was like, this is so fucking funny. Like in my head as a kid, not saying anything fucking funny, but just like laughing at this, like, you know, very obvious reference to I can't do that day. I can't do that, Bill. Just like, I was like, so freaking funny. And no one else in the room laughed. No one else got the joke.
And I had one of those moments when I was in school too, and it was like barely starting college. So they wanted to have we had to do a presentation of a exciting moment and a shocking moment. So what I did is I actually did the big tournament that's coming up this weekend, Evolution. I actually was there when Justin Wong Daigo played.
Right.
And so I had a clip of that showing that off of the excitement and rush, though.
Yeah.
And I was like, you from your standpoint, you might understand, oh, okay, yeah, it's just a video game, you know. I was like, but this is actually precise timing.
Yeah.
Look at his, like, look at his stick and look at every time he's doing this. And I had to break it down, like, as of how to do parry, what a parry was and stuff like that. But actually, I actually got a plus for this because it is a deep detail.
Because it is, it's exciting. Again, it's and that's why I love Evo, especially when it comes to that. Cause I think I remember that moment. That was the one where he
Evo 37.
Yeah, he was what that was.
He parried, and he was about to die.
Yeah, he parried every hit.
Every super of
right,
Chun-Li,
which was insane. Which is like, which again is it's insane timing, and it's funny because like my friends and I, we had always joked about, especially in Captain Vest and Cave, like if we were that good, if we were good enough, we could fucking just defense and parry every single attack of this. My friend Sam would always say that as a joke, and then you watch that clip and you realize, oh shit, someone was that good, to do that for every single hit.
Yeah.
And it's possible. And again, it's all this like really weird timing.
It's timing, memorization. And it's just ridiculous. Yeah.
But that being said, it's an exciting moment because it's like it's the idea of here's the fighter that you know, if you break it down and explain it, you know, it's almost like the Rocky fight. You know, if you explain it, the Rocky Balboa fight of Apollo Creed, like here is a fighter that just won't, you know, that should have lost.
Yeah.
That it should have been the end and that should have been the game. But somewhere, you know, and he started using sports analogies, so like that pulled deep inside of him and did something amazing.
Yeah, and what was crazy was And there's a really good documentary that's out. It's free on YouTube. It's called the FGC. It's about the fighting game community, but it's talking about how they're coming from how we started. We started from being, you know, we call it poverty, the poverty group of out of the esports, because fighting games don't get recognition a lot. Even now, even though they're big, you don't get a lot of recognition.
Yeah.
But it's a very good documentary. It's amazing. It's about an hour and 30 minutes, but it's well worth it because you have, you know, James Chen, one of the best commentators out there. Mark Julio, a.k.a. Markman, he's, right. You know, discussing about it. But they're talking about how it was good, but also we get shunned on so many things that happen, you know, like sexual harassment cases. Like, that one bad thing makes the fighting community terrible, but it's not.
It's not. I mean, it hit hard. I think because the real issue with I'll put it this way, and then this is sort of my commentary. There's a lot of toxicity in esports in general.
Yeah, in general.
And there's a lot of there is also equal amount of toxicity in certain gaming cultures as well.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we can bring up the recent Hearthstone thing that happened here in Austin.
Yeah, the DreamHack.
Right, which was horrible.
Yeah, just because of African-American player that did really good.
It was horrible.
Yeah.
It was like when you read it, it's like, holy, because I missed the event because I wasn't really watching it.
Yeah.
But then when you see the whole things that were said, it's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, man.
You know, this is appalling. If anyone had said this at any sporting event.
And see what's crazy.
People would get like people get fired next left.
Yeah, and what's crazy is this. In the fighting game community, even when watching, like, say we watch Street Fighter V.
Yeah.
And we have Snake Eyes, African American dude, from the ghetto. You know, sponsored by Red Bulls, kicking ass and taking names. When he's playing match, you don't see that same commentary you got in Hearthstone. It's crazy because the community is different. But majority of your players that are African American do play fighting games. You know?
Exactly.
You have a good grip amount of African American players that play Street Fighter or Marvel
for sure.
Or all those games. But you don't see the community shunning on your ethnicity group.
Yeah.
Compared to like Blizzard, gotta say it sometimes. Blizzard's crowd is pretty harsh. They're harsh.
It can be harsh. And it's such a funny thing because like Blizzard itself is so fucking open.
Yeah, and nobody were very mad about that whole situation.
Yeah, too, yeah. Blizzard was like, "This is bullshit." Like they were angry. And that's one thing I've always liked. I mean, I've always been a big Blizzard fan since like the early days before they were known as Blizzard. Like back when they did like Lost Vikings and Rock and Roll Racing.
Yeah, oh, God, that game.
You know, but and it was such a, like, this weird thing of like I know that element always exists in these things. We always know that an element exists as horrible as it is, and it is horrible, and it's something to be very well aware. If you don't like it, speak out against it, like I'm doing right now. Because I when I read, I was like, "This is fucking." I was disgusted.
Yeah, I was
almost ashamed. I was almost as weirdly ashamed of like I even play this game, and these are people I know of. You know,
yeah.
It was just like such a weirdly eye opening thing. I'm just like, I don't want to even believe that. And then they hear it's like, no, that happens a lot. I'm just like, that's even worse.
Yeah, because like I said, I looked at the fighting game community, and it's literally a big term, but yet fighting game community gets hashed on.
Yeah.
More than anything else, even though we're like, they're very calm, and I'm not trying to go against communities, but it's just facts. It's like, they're very, like, every fighting game tournament I went to, like, yeah, you have some of your antisocials. You got people that get salty at times. But the thing is, we're always a hype kind of group. We always been hype like that because that's what fighting games are. It's like boxing.
And I think that again, it's interesting that there are. I think like the last thing I saw like that was interesting from a fighting game. I don't remember which if it was Evo or some other tournament, might have been Capcom tournament. I don't remember who it was, but I saw like it was like this clip on Polygon where it was, I guess, this guy had like kind of groped a chick at the very end, but I don't know who. I don't remember what it was.
Trying to think of which one it was.
But it was, regardless of it, it was, it, and again, it's, you can't, I mean, it, there is a toxic element, and a lot of people have it, you know, a lot of it is, and I think this is really, you know, as this week, you know, as this week has kind of exemplified, and I'll just leave it at that, because it's been a been a very interesting week for a lot of interesting things.
Yeah, you either play Pokemon Go or
shit went, you know, shit went crazy in so many different, in very, very brutal ways. But
yeah,
I think what a lot of that, why, what is important, especially when it comes to the, even the fighting community has some good elements, and of course the Blizzard element, Blizzard crowd does too as well.
Yeah.
That this does exist, and we should talk about this.
Yeah, and that's the thing.
Get the dialogue started.
And see, that's the thing.
And how do we fix this? How do we not?
And that's the way it is. And the thing is, the fighting game community has worked on it a lot.
Yeah,
especially with the situation, like they fixed commentary.
Yeah,
like the only people that like the only hype commentary, well, crazy hype commentary person that mainly is on like Marvel streams is Yipes. They let him get on there because Yipes is like the fun.
Is that the guy that does the whole that
Magneto Sentinel? Yeah, you know,
the curly mustache.
Yeah, yeah,
okay,
Curly. That's Yipes. Shout out to Yipes. He's a great guy.
I know like those references like that one. Like curly because again that
yeah,
he's the
one that run. Yeah, Broken Tears, the one that did
curly
his shirt.
Mustache.
Yeah, and that's how that's when Marvel versus Capcom was like, oh yeah, we're gonna put that quote in there when Deadpool beats.
Oh no, that was the best one. That's my favorite part of that, of having Deadpool as a character in Capcom 3, just Marvel's Capcom 3, just the idea of I love the idea of the character being aware they're in something and him being in there. I love what he said, like, Magneto, welcome to die, which is reference to the
X-Men. Beat
arcade.
Him, he's like, huh, I beat freaking Magneto, where your curly mustache at?
Yeah, it's just like,
there was a video actually of Yipes watching that. He's like, he does this thing that he's like really hyped. He goes, oh, and he does this like really hyped thing. And it's,
well, because like that game, that. Deadpool hat in that game has one of my all time favorite like hyper combo attacks.
Oh yeah, he's a fourth.
But I love it. It's just like he does it weird, like his little bitty boop thing, and then you trigger it. And he's just like, all right, bitches,
I'm gonna hit you with every bar.
With every bar, it's time for the hyper combo, and I love it. Like this is the hyper. It's such a great gag because it works out so perfectly. Like,
well, and that really actually triggered a lot of Deadpool fans too.
That's what I mean, because it was like for me, I'd always knew about this character, never really got into him, and then I played that game. Yeah. I was like, oh my god, this is amazing! I want more of this.
I want more
of this guy.
And what's crazy is I originally read the original like classic Deadpool comics, which I was like, oh man, he's hilarious. And the character actually got me reading more comics was X-23.
I gotcha.
Because I was like, oh, she's dope. And she's actually, like, her backstory is actually really messed up because, like, the NYX comic book is
amazing. It's it goes really deep into detail about X-23 and how, like, fucked up her situation is. They're like, oh, she's a ripoff Wolverine. It's like, dude, you don't know how messed up it is.
No,
she's almost worse than Wolverine in the past. That's how bad it is.
But all right, we are officially at the hour mark. We've done this entire show.
See, you need to do a part two with me because that's.
Well, this is what I say to every guest. Every guest that has more to say that didn't get to talk about everything they want to talk about, I always say the following. Watch this, Vincent, get you back on.
Hey.
That's all that means I have to do, Vincent, is just get you back on, which I'm glad I finally got you on because I've been meaning to, and it was brought up by Persona of like, yeah, I should probably get Vincent on.
Yeah.
I was like, let me hit you up. And I hit you up like, yeah, sure. I go, okay, cool. You're on.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And that's Vincent Banks, Better Noise DJ Rockman. Thank you for being on the show.
Yes.
Let's say people want to actually follow you. Let's say people want to figure out how they can – what's the best way – for them to either consume stuff you've made or if they, you know, how can they, if they live in Austin or they're around the world, how can they experience the awesome that is DJ Rockman?
Well, you can follow me on Facebook. I do have a DJ Rockman page. It is DJ Rockman. But the way it's spelled out, it is capital D, capital J, and then Rockman is every capital letter with a period in between each one. So it's DJ Rockman, Rockman. Also, on Bandcamp, we had recently just came out with a new album called Righteous Indignation. And you can go to the website, righteousindignation.bandcamp.com.
Right.
It is a free album. It's actually, name your price. The money does go towards a donation of one of our buddies' choices, which is really cool. I actually did an album that's some mixture of Battletoads. So
that's
a little
cool.
Nerdcore stuff. And if you're out tonight, I am at Barcelona. We are doing a show called Drum Soul, which is drum and bass. And I am actually doing strictly drum and bass nerdcore. There are different genres of nerdcore. I didn't want to say that. So.
That's okay. We may talk about that a little bit lately in the post show, just really quick, just to kind of only because I'm now curious that.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, of course, you can find me. I'm at Vincent404 there on the Twitter. If you want to catch previous episodes of this podcast, you can head to our website, cosmicray.tv/8bitlife. There you find links to show notes, the Twitter account for the show, which is at 8bitlife podcast, and of course, other shows and network. And after you've given all the monies to DJ Rockman and his awesome thing, and you look back in your pockets and you have like, you know, $1.50 or maybe like 25 cents, head over to patreon.com/8bitlife and help the show become bigger, better, and more awesomer. That's it for the day. Until next time, we're talking about something completely and utterly random. Bye, people. This has been a CosmicRadio.tv audio production. For more awesome shows, head on over to our website, CosmicRadio.tv.